And fundamentally, business value is about two things. It's risk and reward. And in simple terms, what that means is, does the business make money, as in cash in the bank? Okay. And how repeatable is that now and into the future? And how can that grow?
You're not just giving a business owner a number. Your business is valued at X. You give in value in terms of the process of helping them determine this valuation and pointing out some blind spots or some weaknesses. And that's incredibly valuable.
And if you can make yourself redundant, and if you're prepared to make yourself redundant to an extent, then we can have a proper conversation around, are you building a business of values?
Before we start this podcast, I have one small favor to ask you. Can you please hit the subscribe button down below so that we can help more people every week? Thank you. Welcome to The Right Place. This is Graeme Stephen, aka The Business Valuations Guy. He's the co-founder and CEO of Bizval, and the problem they solve is how entrepreneurs and accounting firms get a reasonable approximation of the value of businesses at an affordable price. Well, they seem to do it all online. They didn't invent the online valuation tool. They just made it simpler in the front end and more detailed in the back end, where the calculation engine works its magic. This episode is for any business owner who is unsure how business valuations work and wants to learn what they need to do in 2025 to maximize their value. I'm excited to talk to you today, Graeme. Thank you so much for your time.
John, fantastic to be here. And a pity we're not sitting on a beach overlooking Bloberg or something like that. But I guess with today's heat in a nice cool studio, it's probably a little bit more comfortable. So thanks for having me.
Awesome, Graeme. Now, Graeme, you're a motorsports fan. You've got a history participating in motorsport. So let's start there. Last week, Lewis Hamilton was unveiled at the Ferrari F1 team, almost a year after the news broke that he would join Ferrari from Mercedes-Benz, where he'd been for a number of years. It seemed to break the internet a bit. The content was epic. There was a lot of write-ups, a lot of videos about it. Really, really exciting for the super crazy Ferrari fans. How does something so massive like this impact the brand and the valuation of Ferrari F1 team? I mean, it's a completely different vibe, it seems, compared to the last couple of years with Charles Leclerc and some of the other drivers.
Sure, that's a tough question to start with. But yeah, I mean, as a motorsport fan, I'll just go back a little bit quickly and then I'll answer the question. But, you know, I've always been a massive McLaren fan, so I've never been a Ferrari fan. But obviously, Lewis started his career at McLaren, and I've kind of followed his journey. And my background was in karting. So, you know, grew up in the era where we were competing in South Africa, and Lewis was making waves in the international karting scene. So, you know, I kind of understand his journey probably a little bit more than, you know, sort of the casual fan. But I think, you know, Lewis is somebody who's been incredibly successful, whether you love him or hate him as a driver or a supporter or whatever. He's been incredibly successful at creating a brand, you know, around himself, and an incredibly, you know, loyal and diverse following. So, you know, he's got this kind of magnetism that draws people towards him. And I think, you know, if you look at the whole sort of Ferrari deal with him, is, you know, the jury's out. You know, he's 40 years old now. Is he past his prime? All of those things. But, you know, I think the kind of deal that he's done with Ferrari goes beyond the driving, as you see, all the publicity around the brand, every you know, there's certain sentimentality in, you know, he's won 7 world championships. Michael Schumacher, you know, also won 7 championships at Ferrari and all of that. So, you know, I think that's obviously part of the deal with Ferrari. You know, and I do think it will attract a different audience into that sort of Ferrari brand. But long story short is, you know, personalities generally, from a valuation point of view, help drive sales. It's a reason Nike sponsors people. Okay. And underlying all of that is a question is, does Lewis at Ferrari help Ferrari sell more cars or make more money? Okay. And I think, you know, you'd be a fool to think that Formula One is just about the sport and the celebrity. At the end of the day, it's about money and how do you create value. And I think that's a large factor in the decision for Lewis going to Ferrari. And I think there is certainly an expectation that more Ferraris get sold as a consequence of that. So that would translate into Ferrari's bottom line. And yeah, any sort of celebrity or, you know, I mean, some would argue he's the GOAT. Others would say you're off your rocker. You know, I'll sit on the fence on that one. But, you know, I think that that definitely does it drive sales? Does it drive an increase in profit? And hopefully for Lewis fans, does it result in another, you know, world title, which then kind of probably exponentially builds on the sort of like, you know, publicity that's already been created around that.
No, excellent. I love that answer. I, just thinking back to the McLaren days, I mean, Mika Häkkinen, look, he was quite sharp. He never said a lot, but when he said something, it was quite witty. But he didn't have that like aura about him. He was very effective as a driver, also won a world championship. But a guy like Lewis, yeah. I mean, you look at these sports stars just transcend the teams that they actually are on. Like you look at Lionel Messi, you look at Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah. Wherever they show up, suddenly they sell 100,000 shirts. All the sponsors are happy. So I was thinking like maybe Ferrari and their sponsors, the season hasn't even started yet, but the guys are probably popping champagne corks because this is going to be, no matter what, there's going to be so much publicity. They're going to follow Lewis like a hawk, and there's going to be so much eyes on Ferrari this year. It's going to be a super fascinating season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, as I said, I don't think certainly from a commercial point of view, you know, there can't be too many losers, certainly in the early part of the season. Let's see what happens by the middle of the year. You know, if he's struggling around the back of the grid, then maybe a different story. But even then, you know, what did the marketers say? There's no such thing as bad publicity. So eyeballs and what have you is what sells, you know. So it'll be interesting season. And I think, you know, after last year's season where there were lots of winners and lots shuffling around, I think, you know, it's going to be super interesting.
No, excellent, Graham. So here at The Right Place, we believe anyone's right place is at the intersection of your roles, relationships, and environments. And I really want to focus on those three today to get a holistic view of business valuations and the work that you do at BizVol. So let's start with roles. What is the one thing you find yourself explaining over and over to business owners about valuations and how all of that comes together?
Look, I think you're pressing me on one thing, okay. But I think the one thing that, you know, most business owners don't fully appreciate, and it's almost a bit of a paradox about what we've been speaking about now with somebody like Lewis Hamilton, but your business is only really valuable if it can operate and make profits without you as the business owner. And the single biggest reason why people aren't able to build a business of value that is sellable to somebody else is because of what we call owner dependence. So the owner becomes the business. And before you even think about numbers and all of that sort of thing, that's absolutely fundamental. So a lot about business valuation is actually thinking about how do you build a business where there's processes, systems, you can go on holiday. We ask a question, we say, what happens if you go on holiday for 3 weeks? What happens to the business? And this is probably the single biggest thing in all our conversations is like, you know, how do you make yourself redundant? And if you can make yourself redundant, and if you're prepared to make yourself redundant to an extent, then we can have a proper conversation around, are you building a business of value? So, you know, there's lots of different things that contribute to that, but that's probably the one single biggest thing in terms of when you start thinking about creating value that you need to confront. And it's, you know, John, it's really hard for a lot of entrepreneurs. The longer you're in it and the longer you kind of feel like you're contributing to your business, and the business is about you and you make all the decisions, the harder it is to let go of that. So yeah, that's probably the one thing, if you depress me, that I would kind of impress on the leaders.
The other way that I've heard it put is you must be able to fire yourself from the business. As you grow in your role as the CEO or the owner, you should be putting people in place that can take over from you, that can do the job better. And it comes down to how are you delegating? How are you letting go? And what is your exit strategy? Often, I think people hold on to this role. I founded the business. I'm going to be the boss until I'm in the grave. And then the business becomes unsellable. The family were never empowered to take over the business. And I mean, that's actually quite sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. You know, and we that's kind of one of the reasons we started BizVol in the first place. And then I can just share a little anecdote is, you know, my dad became made redundant in his early 40s, 42, in fact. And at 42, he could never find another job. He was an artisan by training. And, you know, even now at 74 years old, he's climbing up on ladders and he's self-employed. Okay. And I swore I'd never become an entrepreneur because my impression of entrepreneurship was him being the business, him and a helper. And he never grasped this concept of actually building a business around him. And he's happy, yeah, but he consciously made a choice to become self-employed. And I think, you know, that was a sort of impetus to say, yeah, but it doesn't have to be like that. As I kind of myself studied and went into business and that, I kind of saw, well, you know, the people who successfully managed to build a system and processes and things around them had that freedom to choose. If they wanted to work in the business, they could. If they wanted to step out, they could. You know, so for me, that's really important. It's quite close to home. Ironically, when I was 42, it was the first time I started my own business. I'd always been employed in a business, whether it was a corporate or a startup. And it kind of did this full circle where I kind of had this wake up moment and said, hey, actually, I want to help other entrepreneurs not land up in the position that my dad ended up in. And that was kind of the sort of incubation, the start of what became the BizVel journey, is unlocking that. You know, a lot of business owners just don't know what they don't know. They can run a business, they can be in the business, but they don't know how to work on the business. And that was really the, you know, the sort of the seedling that kind of hopefully grows into this big forest, and helping entrepreneurs globally around understanding that and at least making a conscious choice about, are they building something of value or do they just have a job which gives them freedom and flexibility and they can be the boss?
Yeah, I think you make a great point there because that, I mean, I've said this 1,000 times, especially in the last 18 months. If you're just working in the business, you're almost doing yourself a disservice. You need to be working on the business as well. You need to put your head out of the sand a bit, look around, what's the big picture, what's actually going on here? So yeah. Graham, what are some of the key roles that a business owner should adopt to ensure their business is not only sellable, but also attractive to potential buyers?
Yeah, so I mean, I've spoken about the one fundamental one is that, you know, the owner needs to step away from the business. Okay, so the business owner, as you say, should be working on the business rather than in the business. And you know, when you think about when you sell a business, it's got to be attractive to a buyer. Okay, and very few buyers of a business want to come in and be working 18-hour days. So if you look at it through that lens and you ask a few key principles, what are some of the things that actually need to be in place? And fundamentally, business value is about two things. It's risk and reward. And in simple terms, what that means is, does the business make money, as in cash in the bank? Okay. And how repeatable is that now and into the future? And how can that grow? Okay. So there's a couple of critical things in terms of building business value. I'll talk about growth and profits. Okay. So a sales role and a sales capability is fundamental usually in any business. How do you attract new customers and how do you grow that over time? Okay. Then understanding your profitability and what we call unit economics. For every sale that you're making, are you actually making money off that? So the role of understanding that, whether it's through a fractional CFO or, you know, sort of a commercial advisor in the business, is also very, very important. Okay. The third one, often when it comes to selling a business, is how do you prove all that stuff? So think about if you're selling a house, right? Any buyer of a house is going to want to know, like, have the plans been passed? Have you got a borrow beetle certificate? Have you got an electrical compliance certificate? How do you prove it? Okay. And that's where the role around accounting and record keeping and making sure your taxes and all of that are up to date is absolutely critical. So I've spoken about sales. I've spoken about understanding the profit levers. I've spoken about the recording of it. And then also, you know, we talk about what we call customer concentration. So, you know, have you got just one customer you're keeping or have you got multiple customers? You know, so if something goes wrong with one customer, you've still got a business. So that talks to client relationships. It talks to understanding, you know, are your customers happy? Are they referring other customers to you? So that role of, you know, understanding the customer, building the relationships with them, those are all fundamental roles. Now, there's a bunch of other roles in the business. And you know, hopefully, like, you know, when you think about sales, how does marketing support sales? But those four for me are absolutely critical. You know, the sales role, you know, the how do you systematize or how do you understand the unit economics role? Absolutely key. The record keeping, absolutely key. I'd add one other one, and that is actually the systems and processes in the business that underpin that. maker. So that could be an IT person. It could be somebody who actually just documents processes. And entrepreneurs hate that. Like, why do I need a process? But you need to be able to repeat things time and time again to a good standard, you know. So, yeah, those are just some of the things that I think about. Is start with saying, what makes a business valuable to a buyer? What makes him attractive? And then you kind of filter down and say, okay, well, what roles do I need to be able to enable that within my business? And sometimes it's a person, sometimes it's a system, sometimes it's a process.
I just want to reflect a little bit on the role of independent advisors or fractional CEOs and CFOs. Now, I'm connected to a couple of organizations that do that, and they do it very well. How do you think they should play and perform in that role that can contribute to a good value for a business?
John, I mean, that's a really great question, you know. So I just want to draw a distinction over here is, you know, a lot of businesses understand the need to have an accountant, okay? So an accountant or a bookkeeper, and that makes sure, you know, that, you know, you keep your taxes up to date, you dealt with your compliance things, you do your payroll, all of that. And I think the point you're making, this word sort of fractional talks to what's traditionally known as kind of, it's a different role that they play. So a fractional CFO doesn't generally, okay, do the books, do the accounting, do the tax. Fractional expertise are usually when you get expertise around like slightly more senior level roles, you're thinking strategically about the business. And in a small business, maybe traditionally you wouldn't be able to afford, you know, so if, you know, you might not be able to afford to have a full-time CFO on your books, okay. But just having access to somebody like that, maybe 2 days a week, I'm sorry, 2 days a month, you know, to actually take a step away from the business. Okay, cool. You know, what do your budgets look like? What plans do you have? How are you going to, you know, get that growth? A fractional fractional marketing person, for argument's sake. Now, for a lot of small, medium businesses, you know, to have a full marketing team might be out of reach for them, or even a marketing agency might be out of reach for them. A lot of the marketing agencies are geared towards your bigger corporates and what have you. So having a seasoned marketing professional who can help you put together a plan to, I don't know, create exposure on LinkedIn or, you know, or a route to market, for instance, can be super, super helpful. Okay. What you're doing there is you're paying. And the last point I want to make is a fractional CFO has usually got expertise across multiple businesses. So it's not just one. So if you've got the right one, they're often able to say, take learnings from other businesses and apply that into your business. Okay. So you might be, you know, selling widgets, but they've got another business which is good at in the restaurant industry, for instance, and they might be able to kind of share with you some of the learnings from that industry and how you can apply it in your industry. So that's really the power of a fractional person, is to help you take a step back, to help you as a CEO work on the business rather than in the business. Okay. And kind of help give you direction. And from a valuation point, why this is really important is they kind of focus on what are the big levers that you need to pull. And valuation's a little bit like that too, right? You need to know what are the three or four things that you can do to increase the value of your business over time. And the fractionals usually keep you at that level of engagement. It's kind of, if you want to think about it in corporate terms, it's like your exco or your, you know, your board. And they give you that direction. The last thing I'll say is being an entrepreneur often as a, you know, and we deal mainly in the small and medium business space, you know, say in dollar terms, it's $2 to $20 million businesses. In South African terms, it's probably, you know, 5 to 50 million rand businesses. It can be very, very lonely. And you feel like as a business owner, you're making all the decisions and you're carrying all that risk. So having other fractionals at your level of understanding, you can engage them at that sort of emotional level, that more strategic level that you can't always do with, you know, the people in your team necessarily if they're not operating at that level.
Yeah, I think the beauty is also that you're bringing in someone to assist you to work on the business, because oftentimes a CEO, a person that works 24 hours for the business, is involved in the business. They're running around in the day-to-day, in the trenches, but an external person coming in is coming from that higher level. They're coming from that strategic point of view. And like you said, they're working with multiple clients. They might have seen the same issue at another client and they've got a quick solution. Sometimes 100%. We're too close to the problem to come up with a solution. And we get consultants in and they drive us crazy, where as if you'd had a fractional person, fractional CFO, fractional CEO on board, they see these things and they can solve it very quickly for you.
Yeah, that's spot on. You know, and I just want to make one point is, unfortunately, the word fractional gets used like quite glibly nowadays. Everyone wants a title, you know, so it's fractional CFO. And if you are selecting a fractional executive to help you, okay, you need to do your homework. You need to make sure that, you know, I'm an accountant, so I can talk about it. It's not just a bookkeeper who does part-time books. That's very different to a fractional CFO. So you need to make sure that you're getting that person at that level. And it's always critical, you know, I know you're all about networking, is to do your reference checks, you know, talk to other people who've worked with this person. How have they contributed? How do they work? Because at that level, you know, your fractional C something, you know, it's as much about their competence, but also about the sort of chemistry that exists between you and them and the level of accountability and all those things. So those are the kinds of things when you're selecting a fractional executive, you need to reference check it. You need to question them. You need to ask the right questions and don't just take somebody on because they've got fractional CFO or fractional marketing officer behind their name.
Excellent, Graham. I really love that answer. Now, Graham, let's talk about relationships next. I think we've pinned down roles quite well. So let's move on to relationships and how it impacts business valuations. Now, oftentimes when you get to clients, when you're doing an evaluation process or you're involved with them, they've got a lot of existing clients. They've walked a journey with them. It might be a family business and they work with other family businesses. And now the owner wants to step aside or wants to sell or wants to merge with someone else. Oftentimes those relationships are affected, or I think they're definitely affected by newcomers. So how do we build those strong relationships with clients and partners to maintain a strong business valuation? Because like you said earlier, you might have a couple of clients, but now things change at the top and the people disappear because they're not doing business with who they're familiar with.
100%. John, I mean, we could probably spend a whole day just talking about relationships because they've got so many different you know, elements to that. You know, so you've got, as an owner, you've got the relationship with your staff. Okay, you've got the relationship with your family. You've got relationship with customers and suppliers and all of those sorts of things. And, you know, for me, actually, you know, I'm probably a little bit like you. Maybe it's, you know, the water in PE where we both lived, or in Pretoria or Cape Town, the wind, whatever it is. But jokes aside is that when it comes to business, people do business with people that they like and trust. Okay. And, you know, I've seen that time and time again. But it almost seems at odds with this thing of like, well, if you are the owner and the business is dependent on you, okay, like how do those two reconcile? So I think let's actually start with the people in your team and the relationships with that. And I think successful businesses is the owner is successfully able to take along his team, the workers, his colleagues, what have you, along the journey. Okay, so that's the first one. If you as a business owner have a poor relationship with your staff, I'll say your team, that's a big red flag. Okay. Because if you've done that well and you've built succession and you've built processes and what have you, you take those people along for the ride. And interestingly enough, we do a lot of our work online and that, but still a lot of our customers, we still go and we visit the premises and that. I mean, it's a dipstick thing. You just see how, you know, the owner engages with the team or the staff. And that's super, super important is usually where there's strong relationships and strong, clear lines of accountability. And it's not just being buddy-buddy, okay? There's got to be respect in that sort of owner and staff and team relationship. So that's absolutely critical. And where that's there, the owner can go away on holiday because he trusts his head of sales to do what he needs to do where he's away, okay? He trusts him to pick up the phone if there's a problem and say, listen, actually, I need you to jump in. The second is with customers. Okay. So I spoke a little bit about that earlier. You know, one of the big risks is you have customer concentration. Okay. And often when businesses start out, you might land a big contract because you've got a relationship with a key buyer or supplier or something, and they'll support you. Okay. Now, that's great. But that can't become a dependency in the business. It can't be, hey, your business is just surviving because the owner has a partnership with your key customer. Okay. So over time, you know, those relationships with, you know, whether it's suppliers, whether it's customers, needs to be moved, you know, kind of distributed. Okay, so you need to bring in relationship managers, and you need to explain that to your customers, okay, so that they actually know that, and they know that the business isn't dependent on you as the owner. They need to know that, listen, if there's a problem, they can get hold of the owner and you'll be involved. But customers generally actually want the processes to support that. They don't want to always have to pick up the phone to the owner. Okay, so those relationships are key. I'll talk on another one, and in growing the business, is networks are really important as well. I mean, you all about networking. Okay. You know, your relationships and building of networks, you kind of have to move away from this model where the owner is the center of the network and everything hinges around him. If you do that well and you build strong relationships, other people, your customers start referring, you know, people in their network to your company because you did a good job. You know, so I think when it comes to relationships, we've got to find a way to say, how do you multiply the network effect when it comes to relationships? That then can help a business grow and scale and all of that. Looping all the way back, that comes down to the core values. Okay, so I just want to touch on this for a second, not as in value of the business, but the values that are espoused in the business. A lot of it comes back to that. You as the owner or the founder of the business are responsible for setting the path and the values and the way that your business operates, the level of integrity, how do you deal with problems, do you confront them head on, you know, and do you trust and empower your staff and accountability. So I'm going on a little bit of a waffle now, but you know, those things are absolutely critical. When those foundation blocks are in place, then I think relationships are actually quite easy. I'll touch on one other thing. My wife is a registered counselor. So, you know, I'll go into the psychology angle for a second. Boundaries are very, very important in those relationships. So a healthy, thriving business normally also has healthy boundaries. Okay. So, you know, and those are the sort of lines that employees know that they can operate safely within these parameters. And customers know they can operate safely within these parameters. That supports and underpins these relationships. You know, it's about creating certainty. And it's also about knowing that if something goes wrong, you know, where do you need to go and what can you do and what can't you do? So it's not about the relationship per se, but it's about the things that underpin those relationships that really, you know, help a business grow and prosper and thrive.
No, excellent, Graham. I really like that answer. And I just want to touch on how it actually works from a BizVol point of view, because now you're dealing with these business owners. You have to foster trust. You have to collaborate with them. You have to take them through this valuation process. But now you're not just a company of one. You've got some other partners within the business. How do the BizVol leadership team align with and address the diverse needs of your client base? Because as business owners, they need to fit with the right person to guide them on their journey so that they can get to the right value. They're comfortable with how things are going. How does that work from a BizVol point of view?
Yeah, I want to touch on a couple of things. And, you know, when we started the business, we kind of had this crazy notion that we wanted to democratize access to valuations for business owners. Okay. Traditionally, valuations were like incredibly expensive. You could only get them from the big audit firms. And often business owners didn't understand them. They did them because it was a compliance thing. So we wanted to change that. And our initial hypothesis was we would build an online platform that business owners could do it themselves. Okay. And I'm going, telling the story because what happened 3 weeks into launching the business, sure, it was 2.5 years ago, is Google shut down our AdWords account. Okay. And we thought we were going to like build this platform. People could use it. It would satisfy their curiosity, help them grow. And we had our route to market was gone. Okay. So we had to think about the world quite differently around, you know, what partnerships, what relationships, how do we divide our roles within in the BizVol team? And also what we realized in dealing with customers is that valuation is an emotional thing, actually. It's not just about a number, my business is worth X, okay? I actually want to talk to somebody. And we moved our model from being purely, oh, this is all online, do it yourself, to saying that every single valuation that you do, you can do with the person. You know, so you could do it yourself online, but we offer, you know, even on our most basic package, a 30-minute consultation to help talk you through that. Okay. And then we realized we needed to offer the sort of layered service options where, hey, you want to have a couple of workshops, understand the dynamics and all of that sort of stuff. So Why I'm sharing this story is because it involved how we think about the business. And from day one, I guess because we understand value and how we build it, we've tried to build those roles into our business. Okay. So my role as a CEO is to think about how do we tell the story about the business? How do we reach? So that's the first thing that we did. The second thing is we had to build a team that engages with customers, does the valuations, gives the business owner or the fractional CFO that you're working at on the other side of the Zoom call or the other side of the table, a sense of confidence that we understand the business. So whilst we have technically trained people in our team doing the valuations and working with customers, they have to also be the right fit culturally. They have to be able to think like an entrepreneur. They need to be able to connect with the person on the other side, ask them about their fears and their questions and all of that. So we built a team to be able to do that. I want to touch on the last point is, obviously, I'm based in South Africa, but we're building a global business. So we do business all over the world, but primarily focus on South Africa, the UK, and we're entering into the US, okay, which is quite interesting because we've got the technical capabilities to operate in those markets and we can deliver it through technology. But we also need to have people on the ground to be able to service those markets. So in the UK, we've got a team of people who drive the relationships, build connections, the same in the US. Okay. And we've got to empower them and enable them to say, well, yeah, just because it works in South Africa doesn't mean it's going to work in the same way in the UK. So that's another, let's call it role that we had to, think about in the business to empower those relationship people. And then in the back end, we've got the people who built our tech, the IT team, administrators, even the way we do invoicing and what have you. And what we've tried to underpin that with is sort of a value set that says, hey, at the end of the day, our core mission is to empower the entrepreneur to make the best decision for them. We're not going to give, and everybody in our team needs to ascribe to that notion, okay? Whether you're the tea lady or whether you're sending out invoices or whether you're actually engaging the customer, that's got to be your true north. And we drive that really hard in the business. We always say to our customers, if that's compromised in any way, I'm available. Okay. Other simple things we do with our customers is, in this digital world, often people are like, oh, we don't give out our phone numbers. Yeah, you can contact us through a web form or you can do whatever. Simple things like that. If you're trying to build trust, our numbers are available. Okay. If anybody wants to pick up the phone to me, they can. Okay. So I think creating availability, and everybody in our team has got that same mindset. Okay. So if somebody gets hold of Crescendo, who's my assistant with a technical valuation query, she'll say, look, I can't help you, but I'll make sure that somebody in the team can. And straight away, somebody in the team will get back to that individual. So again, I'm sharing lots of little snippets, and getting back to answer your question is, it's critical. So we're not a big team. We sort of in total probably 10 people with all our support and what have you, but our roles are clearly defined. It's been hard for me as the founder, okay, even though we preach it and we talk about it to our customers every day, been incredibly hard for me to let go. Okay. I just want to call out a person. Yeah, that's one of my co-founders, Howard. Howard is 63 this year. I probably shouldn't be saying that publicly, but he won't mind. He's built over 30 businesses over the last 40 years. And I think having somebody like that, providing the role of, let's call it business mentor to me and saying, hey, just think bigger picture and all of that. Having that sort of co-founder, sparring partner, mentor has also been invaluable. So long answer to a very short question is every business is going to be different, but you have to step back and think about those roles. You've got to think about how you build the team and all those things. And you've got to figure out where the big important gaps for your business and address them. So yeah, hopefully that adds some color to the question, John.
No, excellent, Graham. I think my one of my takeaways there is that you're not just giving a business owner a number. Your business is valued at X. You're giving value in terms of the process of helping them determine this valuation and pointing out some blind spots or some weaknesses, and that's incredibly valuable. So I think it's not just it's not just a number. It's a process. It's helping them understand the valuation process and also then putting them in a position to know what works and what they need to focus on. And you build that relationship of being accessible. I said, look, guys, absolutely, we've done this before. We've valued 1,000 businesses. And like you also mentioned there, the emotional side. I mean, business owners are very emotional. Their business is their baby. Their whole life revolves around their business. They're working in the business, on the business. They're sleeping. They're dreaming about the business and all of that. But you guys also come across or come from that independent view and say, listen, let's give you a bit of a reality check. This is working. This isn't working. You want to hit this valuation? Yeah. Well, something has to change. Or something's got to give, or you need to delegate better, or bring in a fractional person. So you build this trusted advisor thing, and you don't often see that. You can get consultants and pay them an absolute fortune, and you end up in the same place. But I think the way that you're doing it, you're really helping them go from A to B and grow with them in the process.
John, you're absolutely spot on, you know, and it's about, you know, I often say the valuation itself doesn't matter. It does, obviously, but it's what are the drivers of the value that are most important. And also just things like using, I'm a chartered accountant as you are, you know, and like wording and things that, like, you know, technical jargon that accountants use as a matter of course, 99% of business owners don't understand those things. I say DCF to you and you know what I mean, but I say DCF to a business owner, he's like, what are you talking about? You know, so as you said, that accessibility thing is super, super important. You know, and then the other thing I just want to touch on very quickly is that, I'll use two analogies, is, you know, my son is 16 years old and he's kind of at that phase where, you know, going to gym and eating well and all of those sorts of things is super, super important to him. Okay. So he's got a personal trainer who he sees once every couple of weeks. Okay. And helps guide him around, like, you know, Matthew, if you want to get big or you want to get fit, this is what you need to do. Okay. So, you know, you need to eat the following foods. You need to train so many times a week. You need to do all of these things. You can't just lie on the couch and dream of becoming Arnold Schwarzenegger and winning Mr. Universe. It's not going to happen. You know, so you translate that into a business context. That's kind of how we think about it. And the last thing I want to mention is we can't do that on our own. So we work extensively with fractional CFOs, fractional or mergers and acquisitions teams. I'll use the word business coach quite liberally because we can't get to every single entrepreneur, but those people already have trusted relationships with their clients. Okay. And a large part of the way we go about that is actually then training and enabling fractional CFOs to use our tools and to get that message broader and wider and all those things. So it's not just us. It's actually training the trainer. Obviously, there's a benefit for us. They're using our platform and all those good things. But you kind of have to think about when you scale, how do you do those things? And for us, it's around finding those kind of and those partners, we go through quite an extensive vetting process. You know, are they going to be able to deliver? I'll use a cliche in our business, but we say you need to tell the customer what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. And being able to deliver that with empathy and understanding and all those things is super, super important because sometimes, you know, you're delivering a very difficult message. The guy thought he's 3 years away from retirement. He thought he's going to sell his business for, you know, $2 million or 50 million rand and he's going to retire at the coast. And then suddenly he realizes, oh, his business is worth a fraction of that. It's a hard message to deliver, right? You know, so you have to really layer that with you know, I guess a deep sense of empathy and understanding of where the business owner's at.
Graham, let's end off by talking about environment. Now, 2025 has started with the bang. US elections, DeepSeek is killing and disrupting the AI field. There's a lot of chaos, a lot of uncertainty. It's almost overwhelming for business owners to figure out what they should do, how they should do it, and what's going to happen next. What are some of the best ways entrepreneurs can create an environment within their business and around their business that contributes to them building value and increasing their share price or increasing their profit margin over time?
I'm going to use a few sort of anecdotes. It's often for business owners, like I had a mentor of mine once say to me, like when you're in the fire, okay, all you feel is the heat, okay? And you don't know necessarily, to use a South African term, whether you're just like standing in a braai or you're standing in the middle of a forest fire. A fire's hot, okay? So one of the big things is being able to take a step back, okay? and kind of just distill, the wood from the trees. It's easier said than done. And that's why obviously having partners and mentors or fractionals who can help you do that is absolutely critical. The other thing around this environment and the changing environment, I mean, I think today's age, things are moving faster than ever. I love reading, and one of my favorite authors is a guy called John Rutherford, and he writes these, Edward Rutherford, sorry. He writes these epic novels. You know, one of them is New York and London, and they tell the story of these cities through hundreds and thousands of years. I think the one thing, if you study and you look at history, is that the world's always been uncertain. Okay. It's always been an environment which is changing. Okay. So I think if you recognize that there's always going to be uncertainty, it's always unchanging. Okay. There's a mindset shift that needs to happen to say, well, how do you, they say fortunes are made in crises. And I think in business, it's a little bit like that. You know, you have to be able to take that step back and look at the longer term pattern. Sometimes it's not going to pay the bills, but it's a technique which business owners can do is take a step back. When you're in crisis, when you're like, sure, how am I going to pay, make payroll at the end of the month? Okay. That's actually when you need to step back and confide in a coach, a mentor, your fractional, and look at the bigger picture. Sometimes that means actually you need to shut the business down and move on to something else. Okay. But that sense of objectivity, independence is absolutely key. Whether it's coming to someone like Bizwell to say, hey, look, help me take an independent look at my business, or whether it's a friend or a mentor or somebody else has been in business, whether it's a network. I mean, I know you're involved with the Clara Network, for instance. That's why these things are so important, is because you're dealing with other business owners who can actually help you see and distill the environment. So I know I'm not answering your question directly, but environment is always changing. I think you have to make peace with the fact that the environment is going to be constantly changing. And then you need to be able to take a step back from that, hard to do on your own, but have guides and supporters that can help you kind of see the bigger picture. I think if you can crack that, and then focus on like, what is the one thing? You asked me like, what is one thing business owners could do? I have a rule of three. Like, what are the three things that you can do, okay, to actually make a difference? You can't control everything, okay? So having three things that you can do or control just kind of condenses it and helps you frame that. When we talk about business valuation, normally at the end of a session or in the process, we'll recommend the three most important things that a business owner can do to improve their business. Very much the same, yeah.
No, exactly, Graham. I think the rule of three is really good. I think too often people can also just focus on one thing and it's completely the wrong thing. So if you've got a couple of things that you can focus on or just check in with yourself on a regular basis. And I think also my takeaway in terms of the environment is it's not something to avoid. Everyone's in the same boat. And sometimes you just need to observe. You need to put yourself out there a bit more and ask for help before you need it. Don't let a crisis deepen. Avoid the issue. Run away from it. Don't read the news. I mean, look, the news can sometimes be horrendous to try and keep tabs of or keep up to date with. But don't try and avoid it. Ask for help. There are people also struggling, but they might just be one step ahead of you or slightly have a slightly better strategy to handle it. And they are available. And people like to help each other.
So they do. I want to add one last thing, John, and it just kind of popped in my head now. But we do it as part of our business and the way we do it with clients. There's a great South African author, Clem Sante. He wrote a book called Mind of the Fox. It's a great read for any business person. But they talk about scenario planning, and we use it extensively in our business. When you think about the environment, I think he talks about flags. But to have like simply, it could be a high road, a medium road, a low road. Okay. Always think about what are the three scenarios that you could run. If the business is going well, I do this. If the business is going this direction, I do that. If Donald Trump wins the US elections, this could happen. So it's a very powerful concept in business because it helps you think about not just plan A. Focus is important, but thinking about what could happen if A happens, B happens, or C happens just helps you broaden the mind and kind of normalizes that sort of sense that the environment is going to be changing. And then when something does happen, you're not caught by complete surprise. And even if what happens is not one of your three scenarios, at least you've developed that flexibility to think about different ways of doing things.
No, I think that's a good point. And too often we're planning for next week or next month. We haven't thought slightly further ahead in terms of what scenarios are out there. And it's not to be thinking apocalyptic or doomsday or everything's going to come to an end or anything like that. It's just to be realistic and to be aware. Awareness can sometimes just help you. And then you eliminate surprises. Like, okay, this was on the radar. This has happened. How do we adjust the sails? Which direction should we go? Where should we stop? And all of that, I think, adds to the value of the business because you're agile. If you're super stuck in your ways from the 1990s, you're going to be holding on by a thread. And it's not going to be an attractive business to buy because you haven't built in those processes, those systems, and also that mindset that can set you apart from other competitors or other people in the industry, especially when you're desperate to sell or things have changed. That stuff adds up over time. And the chickens come home to roost eventually. And you can really set yourself up, but just being aware, literally just creating an environment, a safe environment to share ideas, to bring some scenarios to the table, or something that you observed or saw in the marketplace. That just keeps your bigger picture thinking quite robust.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. You don't even need me on the
No,
podcast.
thanks so much, Graham. I really appreciate your insights here. So, Graham, would you agree with me that a business owner's roles, relationships, and environments, and how they create those environments, has a direct impact on the ultimate valuation of a business?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, as I said, valuation is about risk and reward. And in pure mathematical terms, it's how much cash are you making now and into the future? Okay. But that's the outcome. Okay. These things are actually the foundations. So, everybody sees that. They see the number, they see the valuation, they see that when the business is sold, they see the check being written. These are the building blocks that enable that. There are others, but absolutely, John. And too often those are neglected at the expense of chasing this kind of number. But when it's time for your business to be sold, and a buyer comes and does their due diligence, these are the things that they're going to probe deeply and say, does the building shake when we kind of rattle the foundation, or does it stand tall?
No, excellent, Graham. Thank you so much. This has been such a fascinating discussion for me. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. If people want to learn more about Bisval, about your services, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, look, the easiest way is to go to our website, www.bizvalglobal.com. You can connect us through there. Or else they can email me directly. It's Graham, Graham. So spelt the proper way, at bizvalglobal.com. Or John, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'm sure if they connect through you, also happy just to pass them my way. But yeah, that's probably the easiest. And my number is on the website, I think, as well. So as I said earlier, I'm not going to give it out now over the line, but you can find that. But look me up on LinkedIn, and yeah, I'll if anyone reaches out, I'll respond within the same day. So yeah, thank you, and thanks for having me, and really enjoy just having this chat, John.
No, thanks so much, Graham. It's been excellent to have this conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with Graham. You've got multiple options there: email, LinkedIn, and his cell phone number somewhere hidden on the website as well. Please subscribe to the right place and share this podcast with your connections so they too can learn how best to position themselves for valuations. It's something to keep tabs of. You might not be interested in selling your business, but just to know where your blind spots are. Or learn from the experts that operate in this space. It really might change the way you think about your business in 2025, especially right here at the beginning of the year. So I really encourage you to do that. Thank you so much, Graham.
John, thank you. And thanks to everyone who's listening to the podcast. I hope to connect again soon.
Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next time at the right place. Cheers.